with Gibson down there. Oofing! Oh! Raise the roof, Arkansas!
Tyler Wilson as we come back to live action. Pass is caught. Touchdown! 28 yards!
The man they call D-Mac and Run DMC didn't waste any time showing his moves in Fayetteville, as this running Razorback will be the talk of the college football world this season.
This is Jim Brando, and you're listening to The Morning Rush.
Welcome into hour number three of The Morning Rush. Going to the phone lines, welcoming in Fox Sports' Tim Brando to The Morning Rush. Tim, I know you've been in our midday program, and this is the first time you've been on our morning program, so I appreciate you making some time for us this morning, man.
Thank you, Ty, Tommy. It's great to be with both of you. And, yeah, I shook out the cobwebs a little early. I've got the grandkids coming over. My daughter's got a dental appointment, so it's either – the only way you're going to get me at this hour of the morning is with an early tea time or early babysitting of my grandkids. So it worked out.
Tim, since kind of everything going on with coronavirus, you mentioned the early tea times. I hadn't played golf in a year and a half or so, and then coronavirus hits, and I found myself like trying to get out, do more outdoor activities. I've been playing as of late. Tim, how much golf you been playing lately, man?
Lately a lot, but I had not played for 83 consecutive days in the spring. Wow. Because I was doing the Big East tournament. Your old friend Mike Anderson was coaching St. John's, and they were playing in the quarterfinal round of the Big East tournament against the top seed Creighton. And that's when college basketball, in effect, ended. Division I men's basketball ended. We were the only game going. They had already taken the players off the floor on March the 12th in Indianapolis at the Big Ten and Greensboro at the ACC and Nashville. They had done the same in the SEC. So we were it, and we were in the epicenter of the virus. So knowing that and coming home, I've got a wife with pre-existing issues. She's diabetic, also has some heart disease. I had to be careful. And with grandchildren that range in age from not quite 4 to 6 months, three of them, two girls, one boy, you know, my daughters were pretty open with me. They were like, Dad, we, you know, you want to see them, you need to stay in. And so I did. I took my marching orders and stayed in until we went into the phase two of opening in Louisiana. I didn't play. Now, I live on a golf course in Shreveport, my hometown, and it was never closed. It remained open. Not a lot of people played, particularly those that were in their 50s and over, because that was, at that time, the difficult demographic for the virus. And as I said, I'm 64 now, so I needed to be careful, and I was. But I was jonesing for golf big time by the time I finally got out there about 3 weeks ago. So, as usual, I played really well early. And then I started playing too much, got a little golfer's fatigue, and my scores illustrated that. And I'm trying to spread out, you know, the days. If I play Tuesday, then I'll play Thursday or Saturday, not back-to-back-to-back days. Because, you know, you can swing yourself into – when you start making a tired swing, a tired athletic move over the ball, you really hurt yourself. And I don't mean physically, but you hurt your game. And so that's what I'm kind of trying to do now. But I feel so much better just knowing that I can go and play. You know, it frees my mind. I think all of us now, fellas, need a respite from, you know, the trials and tribulations of everyday living in our country, with all that's out there that can frustrate you and really get into your head and make you unhappy. You need to find your happy place, wherever that is, however that is. And for me, it is golf. I can find peace of mind and just forget about everything other than, you know, trying to get that little white ball in the cup by 80 strokes or less. You know, that's always the goal for me when I go out.
Yeah, and that can be frustrating to say the least. You're talking about the end of the Big East tournament and everything abruptly coming in. It made me think about the time the tornado hit Atlanta. You've been on the scene and at the mic, you know. Now the circumstances were different with a tornado versus the stop of play for coronavirus, but nonetheless, play was stopped. And What was it? How was it different this time? Obviously, you had the threat of weather and the roof shaking there at the old Georgia Dome, which is no longer standing. But both in the same, things didn't move forward for that weekend, and now we know for the entire season with basketball. Give us a contrast from your perspective on those two moments you were there for in sports.
Both are chapters in my book when I write it, and I am in the midst of outlining it as we speak. One of the things I've done with the time that I've had is take stock, get some perspective. And when I say book, I'm not talking about an autobiography or memoirs. I'm really talking more about the journey and, you know, maybe some of the things that if I had it to do over again, I would have done it this way rather than that way. In other words, not just what to do, but maybe what not to do in our business. Hopefully it can help some young people as they're coming up. But both were events that took the attention away from the game and to the environment. When you're doing a live sporting event, you are at the mercy of your surroundings. And that was certainly on display the night of the SEC tournament in 2008 when that F2 came in and downtown Atlanta, they made a documentary about it, The Miracle 3, that you can see from time to time on either the Classic Channel or the SEC Network. And, you know, it's I called upon that. You're absolutely right. I thought about it the moment I got to Madison Square Garden on the morning of the 12th. And honestly did not know whether we'd play. We were already hearing when the games ended on Wednesday night, Bill Raftery and I had done the first two games, including St. John's, Georgetown, and Xavier and DePaul. And as we were leaving, we heard the news about Gobert in Salt Lake and the game being called off and the NBA already taking the steps that it had taken. So, you know, we dressed up, got ready to go in to do the next game. Now, Bill was going to be working that night with Gus Johnson, and I had Jimmy Jackson that was supposed to work with me. Jimmy had to leave because he had a situation in L.A. with his young child and a personal circumstance that meant that the person that was going to take care of the baby couldn't, so he needed to leave. Because, and again, it was COVID-related. So Nick Baugh, who works some with us and does a lot of Creighton games, played at both Creighton and at Kansas, was moved over from radio for Creighton to come do the game with me on TV. And as we were talking to both coaches prior to the game, McDermott and Mike Anderson, they were all, and we sort of agreed, well, are we sure we're going to play? You know, we're pretty honest and pretty transparent about it. And, you know, we found out that as we were warming up, preparing to go on the air, that the decision had been made in Greensboro. The decision had been made in Indianapolis. So we were a little surprised when we came on. I think we went on the air with that mindset, excited to be there. Yes. But here's the deal. Only 200 fans allowed in from both schools. The pep bands and the cheerleaders are here, but no one else. And here's why. And they're not playing at other places, but for now, we're playing here. So I think tone is sort of, in terms of delivery, your tone has to say that there's more at work here than just a college basketball game to cover. Well, that was certainly the case when the tornado hit at the SEC. Suddenly, your hat went away from covering a sporting event to covering a news event. Mm-hmm. Are we going to continue to play? And if we do, how long will it take before we play? And then after we play, the overtime that's remaining here, will we play the next game? Because Georgia and Kentucky were getting ready to play the next quarterfinal game. Yeah, they were different, but in terms of our jobs as broadcasters, the demands on us to make those changes were obvious. I had a situation in a football game, too, back in 2015 in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Spencer Tillman and I were going to do a game that afternoon. We were told that there had been a huge wreck at the homecoming parade just outside Boone Pickens Stadium. A woman had broken through barricades, driving wildly, and killed three people. And we had to walk over body bags to get to the stadium rather than drive our cars over to the football stadium. And we literally opened the show with flags at half-mast and an obituary, you know, before Oklahoma State played a football game. That is, you know, again, having to deal in the real moment here and now, and that's what live television does. And sometimes that atmosphere is going to impact the game itself. And on occasion, it becomes the bigger story, and you've got to adjust to that.
Tim, what does the landscape look like the rest of the year? What will be played, and when will we play it?
Well, look, I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a doctor. I've never played, you know, and I've never played one on TV. That being said, I do keep up very closely with what's going on because it is my business to have an idea, and I think I do based on the information that I have. Under normal circumstances, fellas, on June 1, I'd be able to tell you what games Spencer Tillman, Coley Harvey, and I are going to be doing in early September. That's not the case this year. And the reason it's not the case is because all of the adjustments that needed to be made and the contingencies that are in place for the football teams to be together and be working out and young men to be tested, and if they're tested, go into quarantine, get the treatment that's necessary, and then after recovering, entering back into the fray as student athletes preparing themselves for college football. That started happening, depending upon what league you're talking about, 2 weeks ago, a week ago, or maybe this upcoming week, depending upon where you are. These next 2 to 3 weeks are going to be vital. And I think that especially young people, the story you heard about the nearly 30 kids at LSU, they all went to Tiger Town to that bar off Nicholson Drive, and they tested positive. That's got to stop, and these young men have got to understand that they've got to have some patience and tolerance, and although COVID has affected the mortality rate, much more so of those my age or older, it can make you sick, and it can make you badly sick, and can affect whether you get to play or not. So these next few weeks are important, and I think that the information that is gathered by the athletic directors, the coaches, the public health people in the locales, regardless of where they are, that's going to determine when they make a decision on scheduling games for TV. They have not done that yet, and the reason they're not is because they know they need this time. Right now, time is on the side of college football. And by that, I mean this. Sport's always been too short. You know, I've always been, you guys have heard me screaming about expansion for the college football playoff because we have time for it, okay? The college football regular season ends on Thanksgiving. The first weekend in December is Championship Saturday. Well, there's already reports out there that conferences are looking to the venues of those championship games in places like Indianapolis, Jerry World, and several other spots about moving those games back a week. Well, not only could they move them back a week, this is not information that's been reported, but it's something I know, all right? I know from talking to enough conference commissioners and athletic directors that the potential of moving everything back for college football a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, is there. The potential of starting the season and maybe hitting a pause button is there. So, you know, you could end the college football regular season in late December just as easily as you ended in late November and not affect the postseason whatsoever. So that bit of time, that wiggle room, I think is the greatest ally that college football has right now. Now, that wiggle room is narrowing. You know, with each day, we lose one of those days with which to work in terms of trying to get the season in. But, you know, it's vital. I'm very, very impressed by the commissioners of all of the leagues and how they've stayed in contact with their constituencies, you know, almost weekly and now maybe even 2 or 3 times a week. Zoom meetings taking place between ADs and their conference offices, even the sharing of information from one conference office to another conference office is taking place. I'm still a proponent of college football needing a czar. I think there are a number of examples through all of this where people have spoken out of turn, and it sends a mixed messages. It would be wonderful if we had one voice that could work in concert with the commissioners of the conferences so that we could mitigate some of the misinformation that's out there. And it's out there consistently, I think, with college sports. But by and large, I think everyone's done yeoman's work to have the contingencies in place, to have the infrastructure in place to keep the health and safety of the player in check and ensure to the fans that we have a college football season. I really do believe that.
Talking with Tim Brando here on the Morning Rush. Tim, everyone listening right now wants to have an upcoming college football season. One Arkansas fan in particular, that would be Cannon Sandy. You have a relationship with Cannon. For those who don't know, tell us about that.
Yeah, wonderful kid. I say kid, you know, he's up there, but as a kid, but he's the heart of a kid. And his mom and he approached me, gosh, it must have been 5 or 6 years ago at the St. Jude Classic. And I think they go there every year. And he sought me out with a Razorback hat that he, you know, normally I'm signing hats for people. He brought me signed hats, you know, with the coaches, all the coaches, and baseball, basketball, football. Hey, Tim, here's your hat. I've got it up in my study. I do. And it's a gift that I treasure and meant so much to me. And I let him inside the ropes on one of the holes, and we talked. And his mom has reached out in the past to find out, am I coming back? And I did go back 2 or 3 times, I think, and see them. And then I had to miss because my wife was ill, but we maintained contact. I think his story, and whenever you see these kinds of stories of unique individuals that pour their heart and soul into everything surrounding their team, you know, college sports and college towns are a source of inspiration for so many. We've seen it with the situation in Iowa, what it means to those kids that are in that cancer center and they wave at the end of the first quarter, starting the second quarter. That's part of what I love about college athletics. And he is extra special. I'm a big, big fan of his. And I really can't wait to see him again. And I haven't done the SEC, as you guys know, in quite a while. I left CBS in 2013. And I'm often told, gosh, you know, hey, Tim, we miss you. And I'm like, well, it's good to be missed. And I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm having more fun than I ever have. But there are times when I really do miss getting to see certain people. He's one of them.
Tim, on that note, and we got about 2 minutes left, so we'll close down the interview with this. You mentioned in our last interview the reason you moved on from CBS to Fox Sports is because you felt there was a play-by-play role there. You, Spencer, great tandem you guys have over at Fox Sports. But one of the things about Fox, you don't get to call SEC games. You don't get to broadcast those. How much do you, being a Louisiana guy, how much do you miss just being a part really more of the Southeastern Conference?
Not as much as you might think, Justin. I don't mean that derogatorily at all. I mean it from the standpoint of I spent the better part of 3 decades covering the SEC almost exclusively, and especially in the time that I was at CBS. When I was at ESPN, I did a ton of SEC too, but I was also doing a lot of other leagues, but I was also in the studio a lot. If I had been, put it this way to you, fellas, if I had been in Vern Lundquist's position, I might have a different answer for you. But when I was at CBS, I was in the studio primarily. I got out on weekends when we had 2 games, like the Arkansas-LSU game. I did that almost every year the last 4 or 5 years I was there, because that was on the same weekend as the LSU-Alabama game. Excuse me, not LSU-Alabama, but it was the same weekend as the Auburn-Alabama game, the Iron Bowl. So there'd be 2 games, and because there were 2 games, I got to get out of the studio and go call games. You know, they don't replay halftime shows and pregame shows. They only replay the game. And I don't, you know, if there was no guarantee, had I stayed at CBS, that I would have been in the position that Brad Nessler's in now. So I was guaranteed when I went to Fox that I would be calling college football and calling college basketball and not have to be in a studio, which was what I wanted. And I was already into my late 50s. I'm 64 now. So I made the decision that I made based on that. And, you know, in a few years, CBS will be losing the SEC. That's already been determined. So if you're not working right now at ESPN, you probably need to be working at Fox for the short-term future, because that's where the inventory for college football is. I miss it, no doubt about it, especially when I come home, and I'm keeping up with it, as you well know. You can't live here and not keep up with it. But to go into places where I've never been, the Horseshoe at Ohio State, the Big House at Michigan, Alston Stadium. I did a Notre Dame game last year at Stanford to close it out, to do the Apple Cup for the first time. You know, it's cool when you're my age to do something for the first time.
Yeah.
And because of what I'm doing at Fox, that's true. A lot of weekends, and I value that. I've never been to a game at Camp Randall Stadium at Wisconsin until last year, and I went to 2 in 3 weeks. And while Auburn was playing Alabama in the Iron Bowl, we had a hell of a game in the Big Ten that got a pretty doggone good rating between Iowa and Wisconsin. Now, they were both trailing Minnesota at the time, but the winner of that game had a chance to win the Big Ten West, and ultimately that's what happened. Wisconsin beat Iowa, then Iowa beat Minnesota, and then Wisconsin beat Minnesota, and they earned their chance to play in the Big Ten title game. So those are fun moments too, and I'm thoroughly happy to be where I am, and I'm also very happy with my history with the SEC. I really am.
Tim, we really appreciate your time this morning.
My pleasure, fellas. Good to be with you anytime. Just make sure it's on one of those days. Just get in touch with me. I'll let you know what date. If I'm teeing it up about 9, I can always join you around 8.
You got it, Tim. All right, more of the Morning Rush coming up.